Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 7, Raising Gazorpazorp. Here's Aaron with the recap.
While on an alien pawn shop planet, Morty picks up a robot sex doll and does what you'd expect a 14-year-old boy to do. Moments later, the robot delivers a half-human, half-alien baby boy from its artificial womb. Morty insists on keeping the child and raising it as his own, naming him Morty Jr. Rick and Summer then go on their first adventure together to investigate where this child came from, which leads them to the planet Gazorpazorp. Gazorpazorpians have split their populations into a female Rand Utopia that lives underground and a male-dominated surface world where brutish barbarism rule the day. Summer is able to use her fashion sense and quick-thinking diplomacy to secure the freedom to return to Earth and deal with the male Gazorpazorpian, which is among the most dangerous creatures in the galaxy. Meanwhile, Morty Jr. has grown fully in less than 24 hours, and his mind has naturally gravitated towards death and destruction. But Morty's 24 hours of nurturing turns out to have blunted his worst impulses, which Jr. learns to channel into a creative direction, becoming a best-selling author. Okay, Jim, Raising Gazorpazorp, what'd you think?
I think this is my least favorite episode so far of Season 1, which is not to say it's bad. It's just all the others have been so stellar that this one... I don't have a lot of experience parenting, which is to say I have zero experience parenting. I didn't grow up as a rage-filled child, so kind of don't know what that's like. I felt like the other stuff that they were doing with the Gazorpazorp Society, as far as like male-female relations go... It was a little stereotype heavy. It just didn't do much for me. I'll say the one thing I liked about it is that Summer got a little bit of characterization, a little bit of action.
Yeah. She has some qualities that she brings to the table. I guess I found a lot more to identify with in the Morty and Morty Jr. plot because I have one more parental unit of experience than you do, I've got a 12-year-old currently. I related very hard to just essentially like, you know, you got kids raising kids and you know, what it's like to, when your parents are standing over your shoulder, giving you advice and critiquing your parenting when we all know damn well they didn't do maybe the world's most brilliant job of parenting themselves. I thought that was pretty funny. And I loved Morty just cheerfully throwing himself into the sex robot and like, you know, like this 14-year-old just giving it to business and coming downstairs, drinking a gallon of orange juice and going back up for more. Yeah. I loved all the Zardoz references. And I am prepared to defend, at least on some shaky ground, the male-female domination split being turned on its head in Gazorpazorp.
Okay.
On Gazorpazorp.
Yeah, that'll be interesting because I'm curious to get another perspective on this.
And I say like I'm leaving myself open here because I got no backup and the nature of the way we're producing these is like I don't have a lot of time to think and get other opinions, but I'm gonna give it the old college try. So articulate your problem and then I'm gonna see what I can do to shore it up.
So a lot of my problem comes down to sort of the stereotypes they show these women engaging in. Like there's a lot of, you know, just passive aggressive jokes. There's a lot of like, ooh, fashion and tops. And that's like the most important thing in the world to us. And there's all these store names are like just shoes and chocolate and live cuddles. And like, it's just...
There's a public announcement of there's a spider in sector such and such, so, you know, expect large delays and because they're just going to, you know, can't deal with a spider.
And I some of these things are true about some women, but certainly not all women. And I guess that's the issue that I sort of have with it is it felt a little too stereotypical of what I guess men have always portrayed women as in media.
So
and being, you know, written by a bunch of white guys, this show
sure
I feel like the show might fall afoul of that occasionally.
Sure. And I think that, like, you know, I'll also preemptively give the writing room of Rick and Morty credit, because I know that they saw that as a weakness of their first season and took steps to try to diversify. To season three, I think they had an even split male-female writing room. They had a few minority writers in there, and that was like a point that they wanted. Because, yeah, I mean, I think that they're not the type of people that be like, oh, woo-boo-hoo, we got a bunch of dudes writing, fuck off. Like, no. They're like, oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's, you know, we're trying to tell a universal, multidimensional story. How the hell can you do that from a singular perspective?
Yeah.
So let's just say that. And then the other thing is, like, this is a pretty tropey thing to do in a science fiction show. Like, I have seen various versions of this, from Twilight Zone to Doctor Who to the most, I've been on a rewatch of Star Trek: The Next Generation. And then, you know, Riker goes down to the planet.
How many times do they do it?
Oh, Jesus. I don't
know.
It's
more than once, I guarantee.
I'm halfway through season three and they've already done Riker going to the Amazon planet, and the Amazon's, you know, it's full of strongly built women wearing tunics and their effeminate men companions that wear jewelry and kind of, prance around, and they're being very, very excited about Riker's masculinity and his chest hair, and you know, they and it's like, a lot of times when they envision, it's just essentially men and women flip positions. Like, the men are weaker, the women are stronger, and like, that's almost like, how would you like it if you were in this position, men? This does something kind of different in that, well, actually radically different, in that the men are still portrayed as like the physically larger, stronger masters of brutality at war. The women are still more slenderly built, weaker, prone to collaborate and use communication to get ahead. And then it's like, what would a female dominated utopia look like? And then they then layer on the tropes of, you know, the women's greeting is, you know, I'm here if you need to talk.
Right.
And there's the, like, a woman that can't admit that she's wrong or that her idea was maybe dumb. But it is an honest attempt to be like, okay, well, what would a, you know, they're not going to do trials by combat and shit like that. You know, like, what would a female justice system look like? And you know, the sad truth is, I think it's very hard to imagine what that would look like, especially, you know, since we've never seen it, you know, we've never seen like a truly like planet-wide matriarchal domination, especially one that would be allowed to, you know, play out through some kind of natural social evolution for thousands of years, like we've seen with the patriarchy. So, you know, this is kind of like 6 months after the women's revolution, right? Because that's all we can kind of sort of like look and in a comedic way, kind of like take pot shots at, but like then run that forward 1,000 years and see like what their, you know, what would their ancient, you know, Greek democracy look like? What would their ancient Roman Republic look like? What would their modern 20th century, you know, let alone their 1,000 year into the future robot sex replication technology, female dominated matriarchy look like? So like, I guess it feels like the politics of this particular episode are a little bit all over the place, but it does come down to the, like, you know, the final thing that said is, you know, when the matriarch dismisses them, it's like, you are free to return to Earth where females are equal, but not really.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually like, you know, if you want to go even farther into the episode, the very end of it where Rick's like, hey, we still got a chance, everybody. There's still hope. Like,
right, because we men and women on this planet can still kind of agree that farts are funny.
Well, also think, because we're not Gazorp-Zorp, right? Where society has been so, has been bisected in this very real way that there's no communication whatsoever. And so none of these things have even a hope of getting resolved in a reasonable way. So, and I think that's one of the smart things that this, the smartest thing that I think this episode does is when they say, you know, Summer comes up with the idea, oh shit, I can get out of this by just saying some of our males actually do really cool things for females, right? Happen to be the gay ones. Like, there's a silly joke around that, but what they're really trying to say there, I think, is that our society as set up currently is dominated by the more aggressive, the kind of the assholes of the bunch, right? And that not all men are like that.
Right.
And not all women are like the women portrayed in this, you know?
Yeah.
They're not, and that's kind of the problem I have, is they don't show the other side for the women.
But it's kind of like all... the fact that it is like that is kind of like the fact that, you know, we've always had nerds and geeks and guys who are more book smart or like maybe quote unquote girly or more
less
feminine,
aggressive, less
but they're,
like,
but they're seen as less than and they're pushed out to the margins of society and they're not represented in the dominant culture. And I feel like that maybe they could have had like a tomboy that is getting whipped and like oppressed by the other women and for not conforming. Mm-hmm. And may, actually, if they did that, I think they would have like nailed like the social satire they're going for. But I can easily imagine that like since all these women are broadly speaking the same, mm-hmm. that's showing that like they're taking a stab at showing like what a form of like toxic matriarchy would look like.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, the more we're talking about this, the more I think I'm liking this episode because I think Morty Jr. ties into this pretty well, right? He's being parented by someone in a society who's not
exactly
who's not buying into all of the aggression that the males are just expected to have in Gazorb's world.
Like 24 hours of Morty, who's not a great parent, giving him a little bit of love and has allowed him to become an asshole a writer, which is also kind of funny internal commentary on the show.
Which is less harmful than just a general asshole.
Yeah, versus Gazorpazorp, where it's like, if you're a female, you get lavished with education and love and support and nurturing and an attempt to freely express how you would like to contribute to society. And if you're a male, you're just launched into the hellscape, right? There's not even a chance of like...
given no support.
Yeah, like what if... So there's like, it's almost like... it's commentary buried below the surface because, you know, Morty Jr. is a refutation of what the Gazorpazorpian females feel about males. They're capable of more than the mind. Of course, it's a little muddied because it's half human.
Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah.
but still, like, you know, there's something
but the parenting is the real thing there that I think they're getting at.
Nurture versus nature and all that. So I
okay, best episode of the season. You brought me around.
I've won you over. Awesome. So I guess now we've talked mostly about the kind of social commentary satire. I guess now it's time to talk about the nature versus nurture stuff. There's a lot of really funny jokes in here, like it starts off with Beth and Jerry wondering what to do about their son's like frantic masturbation with this toy.
Oh,
and
so good.
Like Beth's opinion that like if you go in there and stop him or turn him into Ralph Fiennes from Red Dragon, which I thought was hilarious. She's like, we just should be proud of them. And then Summer's realization, Jesus, I set the bar that low that like just standing in a room and jerking off is like preferable to whatever I guess I did, you know? Mm-hmm. And then that, so you see like these parents kind of like not really knowing how to raise their own son, but like 5 minutes later, they're sitting and sipping wine and reading newspapers and sitting in constant judgment of everything that Morty is doing, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, maybe if Beth or Jerry had picked a lane and stayed there, like Morty and Summer would have turned out better. But you can see like the constant struggle for the wheel of like, should let the child cry out. No, we got to give the child a constant attention and you don't want to reinforce their insecurities versus, you're raising them like fucking lizard people. Like maybe that is what caused the damage rather than just any particular way to raise a child.
The third one they'll get right.
They've
gone to the extremes. Now they can meet in the middle.
I mean, I'm not saying you can't raise a child wrong. If you beat them and humiliate them and, you know, ignore them, withhold affection. But, like, there's probably room for several different styles. And probably every child needs a slightly different style. And that's kind of parenting, is trying to figure out what the hell. Mm-hmm. You read the books. You listen to your parents. You observe your own history. I totally relate hard to like all the time thinking like several times I've gone to bed after having a long talk with my son thinking, Jesus Christ, what part of that is going to help him? What part of that's going to be, he's on a couch 15 years from now weeping with a therapist. And even the stinger where like this guy is just worst case scenario, everything that Morty tried to do with him in this tell-all book about the worst father. Mm-hmm. Still, Morty, all you can think about is like, oh, is he getting enough to eat? You know, like he's still like, you just love and care for them so much. But
I found it interesting that Morty Jr. kind of took a different name. He's going by Mortimer Jr.
Sure. Yeah.
On the cover of the book. So right. he kind of like wants his own identity in that right. regard, I think.
Right.
One of the other things we found out in this episode is that because we were questioning whether or not Jerry went to college. Mm-hmm. He did.
Yeah,
he majored
he did.
In civics, apparently. So
good for see.
There's some info.
There is some hints that maybe Jerry, with the few balls bounced the other way, might make something more of himself. But there's also we didn't talk about this in the first appearance of Wubba Lubba Dub Dub.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, and maybe this is something more of a behind the scenes kind of detail, but I know that like obviously this is like one of the show's most famous catchphrase, and it's actually kind of a matter of consternation amongst the show writers because they were trying to lampoon the like early Simpsons eat my shorts phase where mm-hmm. it's like, you know, which even the Simpsons lampoon themselves eventually,
right?
Like where it's something that catches the cultural and whether you maybe lean a little too hard on that and marketing and stuff, and you can kind of see like Rick forcing it in some of these episodes. Mm-hmm. But it's like one of the things that frustrated them is there was these shallow kind of review takes where it's like, oh, these guys are fucking trying to force these catchphrases, trying to force. I'm like, no, we're actually trying to. And I you know, I guess I'm with the writers because I felt like that satire lands on first glance. So like, show me the idiot who's taking them to task for this, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't think you can really criticize them for cementing a catchphrase that they use one damn time.
Right.
Well, like Steve Urkel said, "Got any cheese?" 600 times,
but it's like
and
they used
twice
it,
an episode.
They used it once, but then every other time they use it, it's deeply ironic, and they Wubba Lubba Dub Dub gets kind of a life of its own. But I don't know. It's like,
but by the time they're here,
yeah,
sort of railing against the critics and the audience members who have taken this as a catchphrase, they
right.
haven't used it a whole bunch, you know.
And it hasn't
become a catchphrase
it's
yet.
Also like in the context of like breaking the fourth wall, like a lot mm-hmm. of times like Rick's like addressing the audience, which is already like I feel like that's another layer that like, hey, this is super deeply ironic when the main character is looking at you, the audience, and like, hey everybody, huh, nudge nudge, wubba lubba, you know. Yeah. I don't know, I thought that was,
well, it's weird.
Silly.
I think as a writer, you've probably got to have a love-hate relationship with catchphrases, right? Because clearly a catchphrase catching on within your audience means you're doing something right mm-hmm. because your audience is engaging with your material
sure.
and identifies with it so hard that they can't help but, you know, spout off lines from characters.
Right.
On the other hand, yeah, it also makes you come across as a little bit of a hack of a writer if that's what you're going for.
Yeah, it's like, and the people want it. Like, it's like, it feels like I've seen this from lots of different creative teams, is there's a tension between giving the people what they want
yeah.
versus confounding their expectations versus, so it's like, you know, you don't want to just run away from like a Wubba Lubba Dub Dub or even an Eat My Shorts. It's more of like, you have to then think of new and creative ways to use it or ways to transform mm-hmm. the relationship. It's so you got to constantly, it's almost like, I don't know. It's like a clubhouse where you got to keep changing the rules to keep it cool.
Uh-huh.
Because
sure.
like if anyone can just learn the rules and spout off and be part, then it's no longer cool. So like, that's what a hack would do, is just like, you've got the, you know, two rules of Fight Club and that's it. And like an auteur would be constantly changing the rules of Fight Club so that,
yeah.
you know, you can tell the difference in people that are real Fight Club fans and the people who are Fight Club posers or whatever. I think I lost a train of my own thought there.
Yeah. I mean, you want to try and give people what they don't know they want.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I also like, I love a good Footloose punch dancing scene. Like, to me,
sure.
the all time great one is the one from Hot Rod.
Okay,
but this is right up there because it like it smoothly pirouettes from this into just a destruction of the town they live in. Which, Jesus Christ, this town gets fucked up a lot on account of Rick shenanigans.
It does,
although
yeah.
I guess maybe the canonically it's only been fucked up this one time because
in this dimension, sure.
Yeah, the other they can't perceive the other dimensions.
Yeah. Speaking of dimensions, there are a couple in this. I guess Gazorpa's overworld is one. I guess
dimension or planet?
Where, you know, let's not think too hard about it.
Yeah, okay.
Where Morty gets the sex robot.
Mm-hmm.
Also a dimension, also a world. I don't know.
Like it's it's like a pawn shop planet. It literally is a planet that consists
yeah.
exclusively of a pawn shop and its parking lot. And I think Rick's flying saucer was there. which implies that it's a planet there, more than a dimension.
Okay, that makes sense.
Human music. I like it.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Okay, Jim, are you ready to plot to the future, where we open up a dimensional portal to BM77, a uncharted dimension where we can access, I guess it's charted now, we're like, what, seven, six episodes into this? It's a fully charted dimension, and we lean on it heavily to view behind-the-scenes details, trivia, and spoilers for future episodes.
Is plot to the future your catchphrase?
It's starting to feel...
Fuck.
Starting to feel like six episodes in, I'm wanting to already hit the eject button on my own shtick.
Lean into it, man.
Yeah, lean. I got to find a way to make it the tunnel through and find irony.
Yes.
I think I just started. I've attempted. Mm-hmm. I've attempted to reverse the graviton flow and find a place where I can make this fun and exciting for me and the fans. Anyway, I'm somewhat surprised that Gazorpazorp didn't, and especially Morty Jr., didn't become a bigger part, like hasn't returned as of season three, because it seems like it would be interesting to see, you know, him being an ally or like an antagonist or something. But when I was watching this, I started realizing that maybe like Morty Jr. dies like 5 minutes after this episode's over.
Okay.
Because he went from baby to full-grown adult in 24 hours. And yeah. Then when we see him... after writing his book, which it seems to be only experiences from his first 24 hours of existing, he's already kind of like old, mm-hmm. graying at the temples, bags under his eyes. Like, he's moved into the, you know, later stage Ernest Hemingway type of model of an author. So, like, maybe he's just dead. Like he could literally be. Lived a week and then he's gone.
I'm trying to think of, like, the consequences of that idea on the society that they live in. Like, the frequency with which you have to repopulate and sort of drop those sex robots down there.
Yeah.
How many sex robots? I know they have a lot, but...
Was there any evidence that the women grow at the same rate as the
I don't
men?
Think so. No.
So I wonder if that's like... if that's just maybe that's one of the reasons men never developed higher thought processes, because they're only around, they're like houseflies.
Yeah, could
you
be.
Know, they're around for a couple of weeks and then they mate and they're gone.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, you can't draw too many parallels between Morty Jr. and their other male Gazorpazorpians, because he's half human DNA as well.
Right.
So, like, what all? I did love his character design. I loved the arms coming out of his ears. I love that, like, the armpit hair kind of came out and yep. turned into, like, ear hair turned into sideburns. It's a really funny, but also, like, design that's also capable of, like, believable acts of crazy violence. But so Gazorpazorp does come back in the form of Gazorpazorp Field in the very next episode.
Yep.
But that's it. That's it. No more Morty Jr. But I don't know. The commentary, there's a lot of commentary in this about, like, all of the writers' shared love for masturbation.
Dude, I love Justin's story about masturbating with his mom's wrinkle cream. Like,
yeah.
This is one of those examples where just an entertaining commentary really worked for me. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to be that informative, but, man, that story's good.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a bit. I'm sure it is. These guys are just riffing on Justin's bit, but...
I mean, I don't know.
Sounds like he was too, am I right?
I've talked to enough men and women to know that when you're a teenager, sometimes a hairbrush handle mm-hmm. or a can of wrinkle cream or a bottle of expensive conditioner.
You don't know or care how expensive it is.
Like a vibrating toothbrush, mm-hmm. like those things just like...
Seen a lot of Sharpies.
It's you just stare in the void and the void stares back and the body wants what the body wants, so... I there's something kind of pure and cheerful about Morty's, like, you know, he thinks he's being discreet. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm starting to go through as a parent. It's like doors in the bathroom being shut forever longer periods of time. And
I mean, yeah, no judgment on Justin. I mean, yeah. The thing that they say in the commentary that I think is so true is that they were just trying to portray Morty how they were when they were 12
That's
or 14.
Right.
Or...
And I kind of like these more like real, like there's like Netflix has got the Big Mouth series where it's like kind of like delving into how like our secretly disgusting lives that we all live as like hormonal teenagers and honestly hormonal adults, you know, mm-hmm. I have not outgrown my love for self-love for sure. Dan wrote this thing in 6 hours.
That's what I hear. That's impressive.
And I think when you said that, like, because we talked a little bit of this just in our pre-show warm-up, that Dan said that this is, like, one of the things, like, people said that this is very mainstream as, like, a criticism, and he took it as a matter of praise, because I know one of the things that he is very interested in is turning the art of writing into more of a science, like, you know, with the story mm-hmm. wheel and stuff. It's like, God, there's
right,
got to
the
be
formula is working.
There's got to be a way to get, like, you know, this down to kind of a formula so it's not so fucking hard. And the write this yeah. thing in 6 hours and being seen is like, this feels like an episode of episodic television. He's like, thank you.
But isn't that what so many writers decry? Just like the formulization of television where, like, you hit all the beats and that's your show and... The American public eats it up.
Yeah, but it's like if you have a formula that you put in 2 + 2, it ends up as 5. That's a bad formula. But if you've got a formula that can efficiently calculate the square area, square footage of a triangle, that's a good formula.
I guess, what is his end goal with the formula? Is it to make a show that he is personally proud of, or is it to get ratings? Because the ratings formula was figured out a long time ago, and it worked for many, many years.
I think he's like trying to bridge the. It's kind of like a grand unification theory. It's like, God damn it, gravity and electromagnetism, they gotta fit here somewhere. It's like there's what people want is things that are funny and popular and successful, and what is successful and popular. It's like, you know, it's like it's got to be a way to fit those gears together. And it's like, I feel like it's his one of his life's works. I don't want to speak for the man, but it does seem like it's something he's really passionate about. Like, there's mm-hmm. got to be a way. Like, it's crazy that every time you walk into a writer's room, everything's kind of the same, but also everything's kind of different. Like, how can all these different processes generate the same kind of outcomes? Or, you know, and why is it the same process leads to boring, shitty outcomes? It's
you're riding the line successfully, I think.
Yeah.
It's very popular, but also it does not feel, in most instances, like something I've seen before.
And if this is the most mainstream of Rick and Morty's, this is not, that's not bad.
Yeah.
You know, like, they can't all be like interdimensional cables. We're about to get into last or next episode. I thought it was interesting behind the scenes. I'm not a big fan of Farscape, but Justin Roiland cast Virginia Hay and Claudia Black as the, you know, leaders of the female hierarchy or matriarchy. I thought that was an interesting detail. Summer having a spacecraft being canon. She just gets handed this like badass spaceship at the end. But they don't ever do anything with it. So there's even a discussion like on the commentary. It's like, we need to get like one of the comic book guys to like write a story of her wrecking it or something to explain why she needs the bum rides in the future.
And you can also hear that they could not care less about the fact that, you know, she has to bum rides from people. It's not like this is something they consider or even think the audience should worry about.
It's one of those things also, like, they say that, but, like, it also wouldn't surprise me in season 5 if she busted out from some storage thing and it's like, you know, with the explanations, like, I just hate driving. Like, you know, why don't you just, like, I'd say, you know, I hate...
Yeah, one line can erase a lot of sins.
Yeah, she just rolls her eyes like, I hate driving or something. And then that's almost funnier that, like, you've got a person who owns this spaceship and they're just, like, they hate driving so much they just never take it out of storage. There was one other thing that I thought was interesting, which there, and this is like a throwaway visual kind of gag detail, where the female Gazorpazorpian judge, who's like, you know, sentencing everybody to the silent treatment and to death, she's sitting on this column, like this columnar steps that has a sis semper calumnium, which is a Latin phrase, and there's been a lot of like, you know, fan scholarship into what that means. And it seems like there's multiple levels. Like, the first obvious thing is to throw it into Google Translate, and Google Translate comes back saying, you're always wrong. Which, I don't know how schooled in Latin the writer's room is. It could be that they wanted something, because that's a very stereotypical view of women, that, like, they're always right, you're always wrong. That's always, like, some of the baby boomer joke is like, oh, if you want a happy marriage, just never try to win a fight, which is a horseshit infantilization of women. But it also could be of a piece, and I wouldn't – I necessarily am not saying that that's not right, because you know, if the writer's like, oh, we want a fakey Latin phrase about, you know, women not admitting they're being wrong, let's throw it in Google Translate and get it. So that could be it. But then a lot of people with a little bit more knowledge of Latin and like English entomology kind of fixated on its association with the English word calumny, which is making a slanderous accusation to damage another's reputation. Then you could render as like, you're always lying or you're always gossiping, which also fits into female translation. But then someone pointed out that this is also a direct quote from the Latin Vulgate version of the Bible from Deuteronomy 28:33, which is the Lord saying, like, these are all the things that will befall you, the nation of Israel, if you don't keep my commandments. And one of them is this sis semper calumnium, which is translated in the NIV version of the Bible as, you will have nothing but cruel oppression all your days, or as the English Standard Version puts it, you shall only be oppressed and crushed continually. And like, if that's what the writers meant, it's kind of interesting, like a feminine warning or admonishment, like we've got like live free or die, or the price of peace is eternal vigilance. Like, you shall always be oppressed is kind of like their watchword, is like, you know, if we let our guard down, then the men can come in and we'll be back in chains or whatever.
Yeah.
But I thought that was an interesting little Latin detour. And I would love to ask somebody, like, you know, which one is the correct one, which one is the one the writer's room actually intended.
Sure.
Because I could believe, I actually think the middle one's the most wrong, but like, I could believe them doing the Google Translate, or I could actually believe them pulling some badass quote out of the Bible and just using that.
Or it's probably more on the animators, I'd imagine.
That's true.
Because the writers, I doubt, had anything to do with that.
Huh. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. Like, when they go to, they talk about the storyboards and stuff, is that something like one of the board guys would do, or is it something that
I suppose it could be.
Because there's got to be some visual gags that they actually want them to do.
Yeah.
But then, as we'll see in the next episode, there's a lot where they just like, hey, here's the script, have fun.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Mineron, from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at Bald Move. See you next time.